Ladies and gentlemen, welcome once again to the Student of the Game. I am Kyle Nash, the Student of the Game, and here with me in the Student of the Game studios, my loyal co-hosts, the Triumvirate Rides, once again. First of all, to my left, hey, let's put it this way. You know the call by now, Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
That's right. We woke him up. He's ready to fight. And then, of course, speaking of fighting, the firefighter extraordinaire, at least the future firefighter extraordinaire, none other than Chris Rankin. Chris, welcome aboard, sir.
What's going on?
Hey, man. You know, hey, a lot more than you'd think, because as we've established here on the Student of the Game, there is no such thing as an offseason here in the NFL. I got people on the radio in the lamestream media, as they call it, trying to tell me about the baseball all-star game. Don't care. Don't start to care. Whatever. You know what's a big deal to me in my mind? First of all, this comes from a place where you start observing, you start looking at that depth chart, that injury list, the players who start. Inevitably, injuries happen in the preseason, right? I mean, this is part of the proof that there is no offseason in the NFL, right? So we talked a couple weeks back with Twan Staley, who had actually been to minicamp with the Miami Dolphins, and he reported that not only would no Sean Moreno, their newly acquired running back from the Broncos, would be undertaking a knee surgery as well, I believe it is. And then also their center, Mike Pouncey, out with an injury as well. The injury bug certainly spreading there in the Miami camp as well. But it seems that the AFC East is not safe. Oh, no. Young up-and-coming sensation linebacker Kiko Alonso of the Buffalo Bills. His season is now officially done, unfortunately, due to an injury as well. And guys, I got to tell you, this got me to thinking. Both of these teams, the Bills and the Finns, are supposed to pose at least some sort of a threat, allegedly, to the dominance upon the New England Patriots. Now, I mean, I take it here because the hypothesis that I've had, I think I can safely say that we've had on this show, is part of the perpetuation of the Patriots franchise is the fact that their schedule is that darn easy. I don't know. On this one, Chris, I'll take it to you on this one first with just a touch more familiarity. Though you are a quote-unquote homer of it there. But so, okay, do we have Coach Rex, the little cardboard cutout somewhere? He's in the building somewhere. I still haven't, I haven't unpacked him yet, but he's around here somewhere. I don't know. Anyways, but the Jets are a big question mark in my mind, right? Eric Decker, Chris Johnson, Michael Vick, all their newest acquisitions, and maybe even Geno Smith will do okay. So I'm not really counting them as being involved yet. They could shock us. I don't think so. The Bills showed a solid defense, an improving offense, so they got rid of Stevie Johnson at the receiver spot. Though they did, you know, make up for that in the draft. Now, and then you have what's going on with the Dolphins, although Tannehill is up and coming at the quarterback spot. Injuries there, the running game, basically, and his center. Look, what competition is there? Am I making too much of a big deal of this? Should I already mark this as the Pats division unless Brady gets hurt?
Yeah, like usual, it'll most likely be the Pats conference again. The Jets, you know, they did make some off-season acquisitions with free agents, like you stated, and then they went young in the draft. They've drafted a lot of defensive players.
That's true.
So their defense, the Jets' defense, vastly improved last year also from what they did in 2012 to what they did in 2013. It was like 10 times better, even with the loss of Darrelle Revis.
Right, yeah.
So they addressed the secondary in the draft and some more linebackers. And so, I mean, they're returning their front seven, the Jets, you know, already. And they added some youth there. So their defense, you know, as Rex Ryan, that's his thing, is defense, you know. So,
that's his focus, yeah.
Right. And then, you know, the addition of Eric Decker on there will help. Don't think they have it to overcome. They might split games like they have been in the past with the Patriots. They might sneak one out.
Yeah.
Unless Geno Smith's starting and, you know, leads corners, like I said last year. Hopefully he's fixed that, because that's what six of his interceptions came from, was in the two Patriot games.
Yeah, well, I mean, we talk all that smack, but the Pats did only beat the Bills by two in the first game. They were playing each other. Of course, that's back when Brady was depending on the likes of Kendrell Tompkins instead of his other starting receiver core all being without Welker, Danny Amendola being hurt, all that kind of thing too. So I mean, but yeah, I see where you're going for sure. I mean, I'm talking about Emmanuel Sanders. EJ Manuel.
Right, yeah, EJ Manuel, he was out a lot of the season last year too with an injury.
Well, we saw Thaddeus Lewis come in and make his impact. Yes, I know. Right. He sounds like some sort of a thespian with a TH, folks. Mm. Take it easy.
And I was saying, Kiko Alonso, he was my Rookie of the Year nomination last year. I think he was yours.
I think he was mine as well, yeah.
For Defensive Rookie of the Year.
He was placed second for the Rookie of the Year, and the Bills got to find where they can get all these other tackles that are going to be missing, because Kiko had 159 tackles, which mm-hmm. was third in the NFL.
That's a pretty big deal.
And four, he's a linebacker. He's got four interceptions. I think the high was, I think, Sherman with 8 or 9.
Right.
And he was a big part of their defense, and it's a sad thing that he's gone for a year.
Well, something else I'll even add to the mix, too, is you had Bill's defensive lineman having years that we hadn't seen from a while. Most specifically, Mario Williams broke the 10-sack mark. We were wondering where he'd been. And I can't help but think that a good linebacking presence has a little something to do with that. It's something a lot of people don't give much credence to. So the ability to focus more on Williams where you don't really have a blitz as a factor, that could be something that's a factor as well. Basically seeing how big an impact that a guy like this can be. Chris, were you going somewhere else?
Yeah, I was saying then also with the Bills, when they lost, you said they lost Stevie Johnson when they traded him during the draft to the Niners.
Right.
They did pick up Sammy Watkins, who,
yes,
you know, who this year might be one of the top receivers in the coming out there, is one to watch.
Yeah. I like a situation where obviously you have a rookie receiver and you have a veteran quarterback that can kind of balance itself out. Same thing if you got a veteran receiver with a younger quarterback that can kind of balance itself out. When you have two Utes, as they say, my cousin Vinny, we got two Utes. Sorry. Two players that are playing with one another like that without many years under the belt, that doesn't make me comfortable, right? I mean, there's no chemistry, there's no real knowledge of the game. Quote. I mean, I guess it's cheaper than Stevie Johnson, but I don't know. Trying to replace him with Watkins didn't seem like the right maneuver for me outright. But then, you know, I mean, if you're the Bills, you're trying to figure out a way to keep Kiko Alonso around. You got other – I don't know. I'm just kind of trying to work it out in my head still, and I'm struggling a bit. I don't know. Anyways, but yeah, I mean, less about the receiver, more about Kiko Alonso. We discussed it's a pretty big loss there too. In my mind – This opens the door for the Pats to dominate, unless somebody pulls like a Vontaze Burfict in Cincinnati for Buffalo in 2014. They're going to be in a lot of trouble there too, I think, especially with, well, except for the Dolphins now with their injuries, but especially how balanced the Patriots are getting with the run, you know, the way they did, for example, scoring the 6 running touchdowns in the playoff game against the Colts. Yeah, I know the Colts have no running defense, but it's 6 freaking touchdowns. Come on. And then Chris Johnson appearing with the Jets, if that has even a fraction of the flash that it could, you know, that's another place where the Bills might have a problem. Well, but the only grace that the Bills have is that the Dolphins' run game is what it is right now, I guess. Daniel Thomas for the win. Fail.
Yeah, but then now down there in the Dolphins, they do have no Sean Marino.
Well, right, but
so
injury.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, that helps out. But what the other three teams in the AFC East have right now is a struggling offensive line.
Yeah.
Bill's offensive line is not all that great.
I'll agree with that. So, I would venture to say that all four teams have a struggling O-line.
Now, right, but the Patriots know their offensive line struggles, and Brady can get rid of the ball pretty quick most of the time.
That's true. He does solid pre-snap read. That's half the battle.
But
right
when
there.
the other teams all have young quarterbacks, you know, they don't have the experience to get rid of the ball quickly. So that offensive line, they need a solid offensive line in order to help them out.
You know, I'm thinking about that. Other than Brady, the next most experienced guy is Tannehill. That's
right.
Damn, I didn't think
well,
of that.
Well, unless Vic gets the start.
Well, but, right, right. Yeah. And I mean...
And he holds onto the ball too long anyway, so...
Well, you know, that's a different topic. We can have a discussion about whether quarterbacks hold onto the ball ball too long or whether they should or shouldn't. I mean, I'm sure my dude Weasel here can open up a chapter on Ben Roethlisberger and whether or not he should hold onto the ball as long as he does. I'm just saying. Anyways, so, yeah, Pats fans who listen to the show, whoever they may be, at the end of the day, the truth of the matter remains, you could probably forfeit the division at this point, according to us. But again, we reserve the right to change our minds until September 1st. We do the final preview show. So we got time. But today, it looks like we're all picking the Pats pretty clearly, I think, unanimously. Chris did. Weasel, you're on board with that?
On board.
Okay, so there you go. Yeah, so don't bother buying those season tickets, Miami Dolphin fans. It's a joke. Anyways, you know, something else that's a lot less funny to me in the news right now is the fact that we have what we do with this whole Jimmy Graham situation. Now, Weasel, we touched on it a few weeks back when it first came up, but the concept of is Jimmy Graham a receiver or is Jimmy Graham a tight end?
Yeah, he's kind of the, I think by name, it's like he's a tight end. But the guy lines up on the outside like for like the majority of the snaps. I think it was like, 60% or 55% of the time he lined up as a wide receiver. But he just, you know, opens up the passing game for them. But he's like a wide receiver, but he's got the tight end designation and the arbiter or the guy who they checked, I think that checks for the NFL, he said that he's a tight end. So
one adjustment to your statement is, and this is something that both the league and Jimmy Graham's counsel agreed on in the arbitration, was that, and first of all, if my attorney was Jimmy Graham's, this guy isn't just getting fired. I'm suing him for being stupid, okay? The statement is, I believe it was 4 yards off the line. Keep in mind, gentlemen, the room we are in right now doing this show, I can't say it's 4 yards wide. If you take the basketball hoop, Weasel, including the backboard, and put it on its side, that's about the same, unless you have a really tall backboard or something. That's about the same length they're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a slot. That's a tight end. That logic is complete trash to me. But however, that's the logic. See, and they did it by where he lined up, not by production, not by anything else. Okay, they didn't look at his production compared to other tight ends. See, business-wise, you got to give a little bit of credit to the Saints, making it more about where he lined up. And you could argue it's a mistake that Jimmy Graham made, is that he made it about, hey, what's my designation, what's my spot, and concentrated more on the franchising thing, which I could see why he did. I mean, let's be real for a minute. We talked about it initially before. It was 7-point-something versus 11-point-something. We'll just call it a $5 million difference. For perspective, that's going to be... That's equal to, assuming that Josh McCown starts next year for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, that's going to be tantamount to basically his base salary next year that we're talking about. And that's just the fraction, that's just the portion that Jimmy Graham's going to lose is about $5 million. I'm going to get that sound wave one day, damn it. I keep talking about it. I need to take care of that. But... if they just made it about a guy who's head and shoulders above everyone else, I think that's where they made the mistake. I don't know. I mean, Chris, help me with this a bit. First of all, you agree the 4 yard away from the line thing is kind of ridiculous, right?
Yes, it is.
Without question. Right. Not even hesitation. Yes, it is. Next question. So, I mean, the statement that's out there, And I mean, obviously he's a little bit biased, but Drew Brees is quoted as saying he revolutionized the position. I don't know. Are you with that statement?
No. you know, I'm kind of torn between it, because it's not really, he didn't really revolutionize it, because, I mean, Antonio Gates was doing it for a while. Antonio Gonzalez has been doing it, was doing it long before Jimmy Graham came
Anthony
in.
Tony Gonzalez, right.
All right. So, I mean, to revolutionize it, no, because, I mean, even it goes back into the 80s with, you know, Kellen Winslow Sr. Started lining up outside.
I definitely agree with that.
So, revolutionize, no, I don't agree with that. But, you know, like Weasel said, 65% of his snaps, he was lined up outside. And the Saints always, whenever they ran the ball, their other tight end they had in, they'd run to that side, not Jimmy Graham's side.
That's an interesting point, too. And then, and you mentioned Tony Gonzalez. He also had a comment, too. He said something along the lines that it's discrimination against the tight end. Now, I'm not going to go that far, but he does make a point that it should be more about production and not position. That's a point I agree with as well. But I have a caller here. Go ahead and bring him aboard here. Let's see what he has to weigh in on the topic here. First of all, caller, let us know who you are and what you want to talk about.
Hey, guys. This is Lamont, the sportsologist.
Oh, snap. What is going on, Monty Brodus? Always good to hear from the sportsologist. Heck, we ain't even talking about the Browns yet, and he's in the house. I like it, man. So, you know, I know you and I, you and I had an exchange or two on Facebook actually about this, or we're, I shouldn't say not you know me versus you. I mean, but like, you know, we were in some conversations on Facebook on the Jimmy Graham thing. You, I mean, you got to weigh in on this at all? I mean, where do you come out on it?
Well, I mean, hearing you guys explain it, 4 yards, that's completely stupid. So I absolutely agree with you on that. But at the end of the day, I posed on the side of that Jimmy Graham is a tight end. I mean, that's what he was drafted for. That's his position. And basically, I looked at it like this. I mean, I feel that you're handcuffing the organization and your head coach, because they see that you have an advantage being in a position that normal people are either a little bit slower or they're more run blocking type, you know, people that protect the quarterback. But they see that you're a hybrid. So they put you up and line you up in all these different places. And then you go back and you say, hey, I want more money. Nah, I know that that's been the premise of this world right now. We see an NBA free agency, everybody's getting paid, and just everybody's getting paid right now. I understand gas prices have raised, the cost of a gallon of milk has raised. So I understand, get your money. But like I said, at the end of the day, I mean, he's a tight end, but what he has done, even though he has lost his taste, he has definitely changed the game as far as what people feel that they can go for. As far as power plays and asking for more. He only lost the battle when it came down to franchise tagging. But remember, he has a lot of negotiations to do with his contract. So that's going to be really the biggest story behind all of this at the end of the day, is how much do the Saints actually give him. Drew Brees has already came out and said, hey, get this deal done. I want him here. So let's see what the Saints do as far as how much money they give him.
Well, let me ask you this, Monty, because you bring up a point about how it only affects the franchise tagging. I would actually think that this had an impact on his negotiation with the Saints as well, right? Because if they're using the franchise tag as, because look, everybody in the room, Monty, Rankin, Weasel, everybody, Jimmy Graham, top five tight end, right?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see across the table, yes, yeah. Is there. Okay, so you would safely use the franchise tag as a place to start as to where you would start the negotiation. Also, you could argue that Rob Gronkowski's $8 million deal would be $8 million. It's about $8 million a year-ish. But the point is, that would be a stepping stone to the negotiations with the Saints. So if that first step is 11 point whatever million versus 7 point whatever million, I would argue that the decision also hurt Graham in the actual negotiations as well. I think there's a further impact there. You catch what I'm saying there, sportsologist?
No, I hear what you're saying, but at the end of the day, the Saints have a simple choice to make. Either when Jimmy Graham's agent is negotiating, he knows what his client wants. I mean, Jimmy Graham apparently wants wide receiver type money, and that's what he's probably going to be negotiating at the table with him. But the cards are in Jimmy Graham's hand as well, because if the Saints decide not to pay him, we can all agree that the market for Jimmy Graham is going to be crazy. I mean, teams will be signing up to try to get this guy. So I feel that he's going to get his money regardless. If it's from the Saints, yes. If it's not from the Saints, then he'll find somewhere else. Now, it may not be the team that he's comfortable with, and we can all, you know, go back and forth about, you know, the Saints' title chances and getting back to the Super Bowl and everything. And, you know, he may go to a team that may be, an up-and-comer that really just needs a tight end or needs that offensive presence there. But I feel that Jimmy is going to get his money regardless.
Yeah, and if anybody remembers what happened with the Drew Brees deal, you know, they'll drag that on and play chicken with the guy until the very last minute, and then eventually they will give him that money. I agree with you there for certain there, Lamont, without question. Let me ask you one more question here, too. You are the sportsologist. You are familiar with the study of sports as a science and a concept. I thought something interesting, and it was brought up by draft pick Eric Abram of the Lions, who was just drafted as a tight end prospect. And they asked him to weigh in on this, and I doubt he's the first guy to have this theory, but it's something I want to kind of float, is he would list himself not as a wide receiver or a tight end, but in a special hybrid position. He referred to it as a joker, for example. Like, there's a formation list out there for those of you who have played Madden, you know, that mentions jokers, and it's a reference to tight ends or whatever. But the thing I best equate it with is back when the Miami Dolphins listed Jason Taylor as a jack linebacker. He wasn't a DN. He wasn't a linebacker. He was a tweener. So instead, you know, they had Will, Mike, Sam, and Jack at the linebacker spot. Do you think that that's where the league is going to go? Or are Jimmy Graham, Rob Gronkowski, Vernon Davis enough of an outlier to where a whole new position wouldn't be warranted?
I absolutely feel that this position is going to transform. I mean, from the point of, bringing up Antonio Gates, I mean, he was the first one to really start doing this. Then you got Rob Gronkowski. Another tight end you guys didn't bring up yet was Jordan Cameron up with the Browns as well.
Absolutely.
These former type basketball athletes being at the tight end position with the size, I mean, it's really starting to do that. I mean, we're seeing in the sports across the board how everybody is starting to athletes are just becoming more athletic. I mean, they're becoming more dynamic, a lot faster, a lot harder hitting, a lot stronger. And their stats are off the charts when it comes to that. So I absolutely do feel that this will transform, but it's really on the league to transform with them. I mean, if they tag them as far as being a joker or, you know, some kind of a cross, I mean, first of all, as a fantasy football player, I'm going to love it because that means that I can put Jimmy Graham anywhere. You know, I can start him at my wide receiver position, at my utility, or my tight end, you know, maybe wherever I want to. So, you know, fantasy football players will love it. But at the end of the day, man, like I said, it's going to be on the league. The league has been posed with a lot of different things as far as that they're going to morph and they're going to change. And I think that everybody's putting a lot of pressure on this league that, hey, you guys can't be old heads anymore. You have to start transforming with the time. And that's the only way that the league will survive. So I really do feel that they probably will change that up.
Yeah, well, I mean, the part about it, a lot of it is a lot of statements out there interpret that the collective bargaining agreement right now will not allow exactly for the structuring of a new position monetarily speaking. But no, I'm with you. I think that's the evolution. And really the best point you made on all of this with Jimmy Graham's negotiation is, yeah, he's a tight end. He's a receiver. Okay, well, fine. We figured out he's a tight end. But how scary is life without Jimmy Graham if you're New Orleans? I'm just saying. Because I'm going to make this statement, and you could tell me if you think I'm right. The Saints need Jimmy Graham more than Jimmy Graham needs the Saints right now. True statement?
Oh, absolutely. The Saints offense right now does not really scare me at all. I mean, you know, I know they got a new player to come in to kind of replace the Darren Sproles type situation with them. But with the Saints, man, I mean, if you don't have Drew Brees throwing to Jimmy Graham, but I will say this, Drew Brees is one of those kind of quarterbacks to me that's kind of like a Tom Brady tight fit, where basically he can make receivers, no-name people around him better. So I know that, you know, it will definitely – somebody will still rise out of this this situation, regardless if Jimmy's there or not. But if you got a sure thing, I don't know why you would just let it walk away over something like this.
Yeah, no, and I said it before, I'll say it again. I think that's going to be a lot like what Drew Brees – and his contract negotiation ended up facing with basically just a game of chicken with the organization, with the franchise, until the very last moment there. One last question here, and I honestly promise I'll get off the Draymond Graham topic. In your mind, sportsologist, how is Vernon Davis and his holdout affected by this? And guys, feel free to weigh in on it too if you got anything. But you first, Monty. When it comes to Vernon Davis, I mean, this can't help him with what Jimmy Graham's dealing with, right?
You know what? This absolutely does play a role in Vernon Davis' situation. I mean, he was already holding out just to get paid, and I mean, he had to be keeping his eyes peeled on this. Vernon Davis is another one of those tight ends that's very, very athletic, very elite type guy. And I mean, for a San Francisco 49er team, I mean, I don't know their cap situation at all. So I can't really speak on, you know, just pure numbers. But, I mean, this 49ers team is kind of stacked already with a lot of different people. I know Kaepernick extended, and he kind of made his contract a little bit flexible so that they could play around with the numbers. But, I mean, if Vernon Davis wants to really, say, go for the bank on this, he absolutely could, and it could cripple that team as far as, you know, trying to bring in any more talent. But I will say this. I don't feel that Vernon Davis is pretty much that stick-it-to-the-organization type guy, though. I mean, he's been there for so long. And if you remember back in Vernon Davis's first start of his career, I mean, he has sort of a rocky career. You know, the 49ers gave him a chance. They gave him a chance and brought him back and everything back when Singletary was there. So I think he has a lot of respect for this organization, so I don't think he'll try to cripple them. But it does absolutely play a part in the situation as far as trying to get him paid.
Brother, I loved that you brought that up. That's one of my favorite speeches out there, too, and basically more sound bites I need to get. First of all, there's Herm Edwards. I want there's Herm Edwards play to win the game, and then there's Mike Singletary. I want winners. And that was in reference to that Vernon Davis situation that you're talking about. And whether you want to call it a lesson or a mental scar or both that was put upon Vernon Davis, I'm with you. I don't think he has the cojones to try to do anything that rebellious yet again. And especially as a team that, personally, I don't think this is going to go this way, but as a team where a lot of expectations are set that they will be back just as strong next year and they will make it to the Super Bowl, I think that's something that's compelling to a guy, especially whose upbringing involved Mike Singletary and has now evolved to Jim Harbaugh as a coach. I that's a fantastic point in itself. Monty Brodus, we're about ready to take the break and talk. Josh Gordon, you want to hang around with us real quick?
Yeah, I absolutely could. You know, Cleveland is on fire right now as far as sports all the way around, so I needed to get it out somehow, some way.
Hey, and you know what? I am more than happy to bring you that closure, so in 30 seconds, as the kids say, it'll be on like Donkey Kong. You are listening to the National Gridiron Network.
The National Gridiron Network. Join us as we tell you what is happening with your favorite team in the NFL or the NCAA. Listen in as we preview every football game, week by week, till the end of the season. Follow us at NationalGridironNetwork.com and read up on the latest that is happening across the football landscape. NGU, football time, just the way you like it.
We are back here on the National Gridiron Network bringing you football talk. Just the way you like it. Here with Chris Rankin, Steven Weasel Hurley, Weasel Weez!
Yeah, boy!
And a very awesome house call by the sportsologist himself, Mr. Lamont Brodus. Lamont, thanks for checking in, man. You know I always dig it like a shovel, and I'll give you the shout-out right here. There are times, and it's been a while since this occasion happened, so you may not have remembered it, but I remember there was one time it was a show that Big TJ Johnson was hosting, and you and I were debating. I forget the topic, I just know it was football. But we were in a situation where I agreed with both sides of the debate. So it was a beautiful thing. Beautiful. Hey, I respect art.
Absolutely.
I respect art. And that's what it was. I'm just saying. I know I was involved in it, so I'm kind of speaking for myself there, too. But it was a group effort, and that's what I'm talking about. So anyways, man, look, we'll get right into it, man. I'll grab it by the horns, man. Look, Josh Gordon basically hit up with the DWI over the weekend, already having charges pending. First off, man, I mean, what the heck do you do here if you are the NFL, if you are the Browns organization? How do you handle this cat?
That's two different answers right there. If I'm the NFL, I absolutely bring the hammer down and I suspend him for a year. Just like everything was normal. I mean, he's in category three of the whole substance abuse thing right now. So it was warranted for him to have a year out regardless. So if I'm the league, I go ahead and do that because they're already testing a lot of slack behind, you know, the whole Jim Irsay, and they suspended a lot of other players, and everybody has always questioned them and been like, why haven't they come down already on Josh Gordon? So if I'm the league, I go ahead and make that happen. Now, if I'm the Browns organization, I don't do anything. I don't do anything, and this is the reason why. The Browns don't have to send out a message to none of their players or anything like that. They brought in some veterans. Everybody else besides Johnny Manziel and Josh Gordon have been chilling. Everybody's ready to win. They're very, very excited about everything going on in Cleveland right now. But the thing that they will look at is if, say, the Browns say release him or something like that, then players will lose trust in the organization automatically. And that's because at the end of the day, players are people. And if somebody is sitting there and needing help, the last thing you want to do as an organization or any kind of an entity as far as a business, last thing you want to do is just give up on somebody and let them go and just throw them out there. I'm not going to lie to you guys. This guy has tremendous talent. So if he gets released, somebody's going to pick him up. Somebody like the Patriots, some kind of strong organization is going to pick him up, pat him on the back and say, everything's going to be okay. We're going to get you help. What they do with that year that the NFL grants that he suspended, because let's remember, when a player gets suspended for a year, they still have to reapply to the NFL and get back in. So it's not a guarantee that he can't even come back in by the league standards. So You let him get a year. You let him chill out. You let him get away from football for a little bit to reevaluate his life and his situation. Hopefully he enters into some kind of a rehab situation. You keep tabs on the man. If the man does not show that he's doing anything to try to improve the situation whatsoever and prove that football is very, very important to him, then that's when you start making decisions. But as of right now, if I'm the Browns, I'm chilling. I got a new head coach. I got a new GM. Relax. Let the NFL do its thing.
Okay. Well, and let me hit one topic first, because you made two. Again, I asked you questions that had two different answers. You went kind of two different directions there, too, to follow it. So let me do the follow-up. First of all, when it comes to lowering the hammer, what I've kind of noticed is that when it comes to Roger Goodell and the lowering of the hammer, he tends to wait until the legal process is complete. So for people to go, oh, well, he hasn't done anything yet. I mean, first of all, Josh Gordon was supposed to face sentencing later this month about another charge that violated the NFL substance policy. So I think, you know, there's a matter of organization there, too. So to that extent, I kind of feel like Roger Goodell is just a little bit unfairly, what is the word, criticized, because he's consistent. He always seems to wait until the legal action is complete, which, my opinion, is a good move.
Right.
But the Browns organization doing nothing, the first thing that comes to my mind is, not that it's exactly the same as this, but Aldon Smith last year had his share of issues with San Francisco, and they essentially rallied around him and worked to get him help as well. Would it make sense for the Browns to do that? And B, have you heard anything that's kind of happening?
As of right now, the Browns have been pretty quiet on everything. I mean, they said that, you know, they're going to just sit back and kind of gather all the facts. You know, Gordon got a DWI in Raleigh, North Carolina, which is actually about an hour away from me. So I was able to get a jump on the story way before it even hit the national media. So I was tracking it. And with the DWI type situation, the puzzling and funny things about this whole entire thing is this. Okay, he was pulled over. His blood alcohol level was 0.09, which in the state of North Carolina, 0.08 is the legal limit. So he was definitely over that. But then also now you're starting to hear more connections on different things, like the guy who bailed him out of jail, you know, was a convicted felon. And now people are saying, you know, different things about him, maybe having some links or connections to P.J. Harrison, who himself has just been, you know, convicted of a misdemeanor for punching somebody on the basketball court. But he's always been a troublemaker with North Carolina here, the Tar Heels. So it starts to really, really jump out to me as, like, not only are we looking at this guy for maybe his addiction to, say, marijuana, because that's what he was up for, you know, failing a drug test again. But now it's like, okay, well, who do you have around you? You know, what kind of circles are you running around? And, you know, what kind of choices are you making? And is football really that important to you? Because if it's not, then there's no reason to give this guy another chance if that's something that's not important to him in his life and he just wants to run around and act crazy.
Yeah, no, a lot of what you're saying there makes a lot of sense. And, I mean, basically, at this point here, I mean, I know there's got to be some kind of a punishment, you know, the necessary parties will take care of it. And the Browns, you know, I like that the Browns are still gathering information. I figured that was the answer, you know, it just happening over this past weekend or whatever. So that makes its own sense. But, you know, let me ask you this. And this was already going to be a question I would have asked you in the first place if it was, you know, whether we had this latest charge or not. And that's, what do the Browns do roster-wise? How do you fill that gap? He led the league in yards last year. What's next?
Well, first of all, that was a complete surprise. So I don't even think the Browns were expecting that at all. So that was a complete surprise to everybody. They tried to make moves. I know that they got a lot of slack for not getting, you know, a wide receiver. You know, they passed up on Sammy Watkins and took Justin Gilbert with the first round draft pick, and, you know, by trading back with the Bills. They signed free agents. You know, we already know that they got Andrew Hawkins from the Cincinnati Bengals, which is always great to, you know, to steal a rival's, you know, player. I know that they brought in Miles Austin, and you haven't really heard too much about him because they're really, really being careful about his hamstring, and just want to make sure that, you know, going into training camp, he's ready to go. There's been some other rumors of other wide receivers stepping up to the plate. Anthony Armstrong is a name that comes up. I know you guys won't probably know too much about him.
He made some noise,
but
though.
He's another name that has stepped up. You said what now?
He's made some noise, though. I know the name.
Oh, okay. Okay, cool. I'm sorry. You're a student of the game. I apologize. I pay homage. but yeah, Anthony Armstrong has stepped up as well. The Browns' approach to the whole wide receiver position is going to be, you know, basically how you hear about running backs, what they're going to do wide receiver by committee. I mean, they're going to be plugging in, trying to figure out things. You got an unproven quarterback in Brian Hoyer, but they still really don't know. You got a new offense with Kyle Shanahan, so they're still going to be tinkering that. So training camp is going to be really, really essential for them. Also, they want to lean a lot on the run because not only do they have a Ben Tate that came in, but they also have some great running backs behind them. Cromwell is one. What was the other guy? He slipped my mind. Terrence West, yeah. And Terrence West is also another running back there as well. So they're really going to be trying to, you know, utilize all their running backs to make sure that it's a run-heavy type offense. And then use wide receivers plugging and playing as much as they can. And then let's not forget, too, you know, they have a Jordan Cameron. He came on the scene really, really fast at the beginning of the season. Kind of tempered off towards the end, which is to be expected, man. The guy was playing with three different quarterbacks, so I kind of understand. Not to mention, you know, well, two and a half quarterbacks because Brandon Wheaton was in there, so I'm going to say that.
thoroughly appropriate statement.
So, you know, he's been playing with all kinds of different quarterbacks and everything. So with everybody coming into training camp, being on the first start, being on the same level, being able to get chemistry – I really feel that this Browns team, as far as with the receiver, you know, position, it may not be eye-popping numbers like we would want to see, but I think they'll still be very efficient. Let's remember they're in the AFC North where, you know, most of the teams normally do run a lot, even though they're starting to kind of transform into a throwing-type, conference division, you know, with the Andy Daltons, you know, Andy Dalton and A.J. Green. Ben Roethlisberger has been trying to throw it around, even though it's not been successful, and, you know, and of course Joe Flacco, but I think that they'll be okay.
Fair enough. So there are the lists, there are the alternatives for the Browns when it steps in, and fantastic house call giving us a bit of information. You guys got any questions for the sportsologist before we send them out?
It's good stuff.
Okay, great. In that case, Monty, tell them where they can find you, a little bit about your podcast with Big TJ and the General, Mike Patton, 3 points the hard way.
Cool, yeah. We do a show every other Sunday, 3 points the hard way. It was this past Sunday, so not this week, but the next week after that. We're talking right now of maybe moving it up to every Sunday, but we're still talking about it. But I do 3 points the hard way on Go Podcast with Big TJ. Follow him on Twitter at BigTJ2020. Also with Mike Patton, the General, General_MP. Then after that, I hop over to Root for Sports Show with my man Jason Fearman at Sports Profit 1 on Twitter. Where we do that from 10 a.m. To noon Eastern. Catch me over on RootForSports.com, where we're constantly writing articles and putting out all the latest information. Follow me on Twitter at The Sportsologist. That's what we do.
I like it. Tight like a vice. Lamont Brodus, The Sportsologist. Thank you very much for stopping in, my man.
Hey, no problem. Thanks for having me, guys. You guys have a great rest of the show.
Thanks, man. So, hey, always awesome to hear from the Sportsologist. Monty Brothers having a lot to come in there. I'm glad we got a chance. I'm glad he called in because he had a lot of insight that I wouldn't have had on the Browns roster, although I did know who Anthony Armstrong was. Now I can't even talk. But Terrence Wentz and some of those other guys are names I wouldn't necessarily had in mind. I don't know. But so Josh Gordon, gentlemen, he's talking suspension for the full year is basically just – hold pat on that. Are you guys cool with that, or are you going with what should be done with Josh Gordon?
You know, I'd say, yeah, you can hold on to him right now. I mean, they don't really have any other receiving options, as you mentioned earlier, you know, by committee.
Right.
They are stacked on defense, the Cleveland Browns. When you look at it, and even in the draft, they even drafted more defensive players.
Right.
Picked up defensive players in the offseason. They're stacked there. I mean, maybe even trade one of those defensive players away to try to get a receiver, like a second tier receiver, just someone that you can get in there that has some, you know, has some skill behind him. I know he said Miles Austin, you know, who's there in Indy for a while,
right?
Well,
yeah,
but
I mean, just something that can get off the street where Jordan Cameron can stretch the field and provide opportunities. Basically, what he's suggesting is that they kind of mold their offense, and in my mind, off of what the 49ers do. Now, granted, Jordan Cameron, is he Vernon Davis? I don't know.
Well,
but
the Cleveland Browns did that last year. I mean, that, as he said, Jordan Cameron's stats tapered off at the end of the year, but that's when Josh Gordon's stats took
to
off.
Hot, yeah.
Because, you know, Jordan Cameron's stats were phenomenal the first four games. Two of those games, Josh Gordon was out. The other two games, no one even still knew who Josh Gordon was.
Yeah, that's true.
So
I know
Josh Gordon didn't really come on until week 10. You know, that's when he started throwing those two over 200-yard games back-to-back-to-back or whatever they were. So, I mean, yeah, Jordan Cameron really was the centerpiece of their offense last year. He was my top, you know, one of my top tight ends last year. He probably would have made my top five for fantasy in there. Actually, he was my top five fantasy. And I thought I can get him lower on the draft, and I just missed him by two picks. But
details.
All right.
No, I mean, and – I like when I think about it, it's not like they're going to be completely helpless. But again, I mean, when it comes down to the Browns, is it Hoyer? Is it Manziel? The quarterback situation's iffy. I mean, that defense is going to have to bail them out of some stuff. Weasel, what do you got?
All right, so just want to talk a little bit about Chris Carter, who,
yes,
he was a former Eagles player in about 1987.
Well, before we get to the Eagles thing, he's most famously known, you know, kind of a big deal with the Vikings.
Yeah,
for a while.
Yeah, we're getting there.
A little bit. Okay.
So we got him with the Eagles from 87 to 89, and the guy had some pretty major problems. He was using, I didn't say allegedly, but there's an article, so using cocaine, marijuana, ecstasy, and he was a heavy drinker.
Let me say this right now. In the Hall of Fame, when I was there, I was there the year he was inducted, and he cited specifically that the most trying time in his life was when he was dealing with all that abuse. He specifically mentioned cocaine. He specifically mentioned drinking. You can get rid of the alleged tag on that, is what I'm saying. But he said the person he most admired in his life was his son, to stick with him, to keep believing in him, and he that was part of his motivation to get back, to make the bounce back that he did with the Vikings. So anyway, just something I want to inject in there. Go ahead, Weasel.
Yeah, so the coach at the time for the Eagles was Buddy Ryan, and he pretty much said, you know, it's enough of this, and he cut him. Now, this gave Chris Carter, he kind of, like, it was like a wake-up call to him. And so the thing about it was that he you know, did everything to, you know, come back with the Vikings, and he was a dominant player. But the thing is, let's see, per one of my sources right here, let's see, he stopped drinking and drugging and during that 1990 season with the Vikings, where he joined on. And he, the thing is he got this as a wake-up call, and I think he was, you know, strong. That takes a lot to get over that kind of, you know, drugs and alcohol thing. But he's saying that in, like, an interview earlier, I think this week, that Josh Gordon should get, pretty much the Browns, the best thing they could do for him is cutting him. And I think there's just so much going on with Josh Gordon that he needs to, I think personally, what they should do is that he needs to get in like a major rehab program, and it's got to be like, you know, maybe a year long thing or something like that. But I don't think they should cut him, but because the guy is going to most likely spiral down. The Browns should be keeping up with the guy. Like, you don't just want to, you know, let him go and cut him, and then you're assuming that he's going to go. That's going to be a wake-up call. So I think rehab would be the way to go. And he has a – there was a guy that – he played 2 years with the Browns. It was DaQuell Jackson.
Yes, linebacker.
And a linebacker. And he said that, you know, it's time, you know, the Browns, you know, help out. And it's just – because this is – it's football, but, you know, this is the guy's life. And yeah, he's got problems. So he's got a year, and I think that'll – hopefully, you know, he goes back on the right track, and people around him, hopefully he's got to stay away from like a certain crowd, like driving with people who are carrying marijuana or smoking and stuff like that. So I don't think cutting him would be the way to go. It's got to be with for the Browns. I think they should support the guy, and you don't have to worry about him for the season. Just have, you know, the background guys, you know, just to, you know, check up on him and stuff, and he can come back. The guy, in 14 games, he had like over 1,600 yards. And second was Antonio and from the Steelers.
Antonio Brown.
Antonio Brown had 150 yards less than Gordon. So,
and that's after missing two games, too, which is awesome football-wise that he's doing that in 14 games, but sucks that that was due to a codeine.
Right, yes.
In 2013, where he was suspended for two games.
The thing that's kind of messed up about the coding thing, he said that he had a strep. He said, like, in quotes and stuff, that he had a strep throat.
Right.
And so the doctors prescribed him coughing syrup, which and it happened to have codeine in it.
Right.
But the thing is that I think it's a strep throat is more like you need antibiotics.
Yes.
And so he tried, I think, to, you know, stretch the truth, I bet. So
how you did that.
You know, the guy's making excuses. He was. And now it's like it's multiple things. It's his suspensions. He was in college, I think, for it was like a.
When yeah, you know, when he was at Baylor, he failed a drug test twice, was kicked out of school, went to Utah, and failed a drug test there for marijuana.
So basically what we're kind of unraveling here that we didn't really get to with the sportsologist at all, but like what we're kind of unraveling here is that these NFL incidents ain't the beginning.
No, it started back in 2010 when he was at Baylor.
Yeah, so.
And then I think his first drug test he failed for the NFL was – he didn't show up for the mandatory drug test, so they count that as a fail.
Right.
Well, that's messed up.
I don't think so.
No, because it's a mandatory drug test, so he knows he wouldn't pass.
You can like try to like go clean for that short amount of time. So, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, like, oh, darn, I can't pee today. Oh, no, yeah. I mean, it's – I mean, let's put it this way. It's like, oh, I didn't go to court for this traffic ticket. Guess I didn't do it. No, that's not how it works. You know, I mean,
yeah,
that's the best example I could think of. It's not a great one, but, you know. So, yeah, I mean, when it comes to that, you have a long history there. I'm with you, Weasel. I don't think cutting him is a great idea, but let me tell you why. I know why Chris Carter's saying it. Because, first of all, it's in his Hall of Fame speech. I hate to keep bringing that up, but, I mean, it's relevant to really paint the picture of where Chris Carter's coming from, right? He said that this is a paraphrase. It's almost a quote, but I don't remember it that well. Give me a break. It's almost a year ago, which, by the way, the National Gridiron Network will be back to the Hall of Fame, so look out for that in the beginning of August here on NGSCSports.com. Anyways, so he said the best thing that ever happened to him at that time was Buddy Ryan cutting him. How often do you hear any player in any sport saying the best thing that ever happened to me was a coach cutting me? Now, unless it's like, you know, a Michael Jordan kind of thing where you're like, hey, my high school coach cut me and now he can, you know, look what I did now. Huh? Who's the joke? You know,
I think the difference with the Chris Carter thing and the Josh Gordon thing is that Chris Carter, he was cut in 1989.
Right.
And he started with the Vikings in 1990.
Right.
So the thing about Gordon is that the guy's going to have a year off. So he's going to, I mean, what the guy, I think he's going to, if he's not playing football, I mean, is he going to go back to the, you know, the bad crowd? Is he going to do like, you know, continue smoking or something like that? Chris Carter had people around him, like players motivating him because he was very talented, great hands. And you know, he turns out like one of the best, you know, wide receivers in NFL history. So, yeah. So.
Well, it depends on how you define a year, too, Weasel. I mean, yeah, Chris Carter was cut in 1989 and then 90 went to the Vikings. But when abouts was he cut? When abouts would he be brought back on with the Vikings, right? I mean, it probably was about a year, right? I mean, you know, between 6 and 10 months. Granted, obviously, the more time, the more risk of what you're talking about is legitimate, too. Another point I bring up, and Lamont Brodus kind of alluded to it as well. Let's say they do cut him. Now, granted, the year suspension, that concept makes this a little, could make this a little bit more difficult than I make it sound, but let's say they cut him. He led the league in receiving yards last year. Does anybody want to try to tell me that no one would go for him?
In 14 games.
Thank you, Weasel. I don't care if he's got a year suspension or not. Somebody's going to try to get rights to him. Am I nuts to think that?
No, you're not. I mean, you're exactly correct. But, I mean, there's a player right now that's in the NFL that had the same kind of issues in college. It's Tyrann Mathieu. The honey badger. Right. You know, he got kicked out of LSU after he had 10 failed drug tests.
What?
10.
Actually. 10. Actually, Les Miles said that he stopped counting when it got to 10.
Well, that's
so.
See, oh wow, so more than 10. So see, that's why it's Saturday Night Lights instead of Friday Night Lights. They needed that extra day for all the missed drug tests. Right,
right, okay, exactly. So, I mean, he had 10, and right now he's, you know, he went through the drug rehab, you know, since he got kicked out of there. You know, Arizona Cardinals last year, he was doing pretty well until his knee injury. But I mean, he's still clean. He hasn't failed a drug test in the NFL with his rehab. And then I just saw a tweet that someone said that Josh Gordon should hang out with Tyrann Mathieu and for the rehab. And Tyrann Mathieu said, oh, no, I'm still in rehab.
Well, so. In all honesty, that joke is made. But someone like that who has shared in the experience being a mentor isn't that bad. Now, obviously, in my mind, Chris Carter needs to take himself off the list. Okay, because Chris Carter's situation, he was potential. He wasn't production. And it's led the league in receiving yards, and how long, Weasel?
Well, for 14 weeks, you're talking
14
about
14 games. Bingo. Yeah. There you go. So you got it. And that's not the same as a kid not living up to his potential because he was distracted by partying. That's two different things. However, in the ilk of mentioning cats getting a hard time because of too much partying, I can't help but wonder, and you guys weigh in on this, how much is this going to affect Johnny Manziel? Or do we have the explanation as to why people give Manziel a hard time? Do they assume, because of all the pictures and stuff that Johnny Manziel's taking, that he's indeed partying like that as well? I don't know. Where do you come out?
You know, you never know with Johnny Manziel how he parties. I mean, he parties hard all the time. There's pictures of him in Texas A&M with him partying. So you don't know exactly how he's going to turn out. I mean, He's like the Justin Bieber of the NFL, pretty much.
Whoa. Well,
let's not get some updates on Bieber. Quite hilarious.
Yes, well, yes. And we have no reason to believe that at this time that Johnny Manziel is indeed a racist like Justin Bieber is allegedly. But I mean, I don't know. As much as we say, see, I'm still a guy that says, leave Johnny alone. See how I made it relevant with pop culture references? But you see Josh Gordon, and all of a sudden, I mean, I don't know. You tell me, Weasel, does that lend credence to people getting on Manziel's case? I don't know. It's whole, tough, right?
The whole thing about Manziel, okay, the guy, he was a freshman. He won the Heisman, right? I was pretty sure.
Yes, you're correct.
Yeah. So
at Texas A&M.
The guy is, you know, he's like, I think like 6 foot or so. And he has like a lot of outside the college football scene. He's a partier and stuff like that. And it's just that people, they want to know so much about him. And it's like, what's he going to do next? And it's the thing with him is that he still has the ways like with the showing the money,
oh,
rubbing
right.
his thumb and his finger.
The money bling symbol, I guess I'll call it. I mean, it's basically his gang sign. I'll call it what it is.
And he is, I think that, how do you say, everybody is like, you know, everybody's watching him. They mm-hmm. want to know like how he does. And he's the kind of guy that you hate him or you love him.
He's polarizing, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I mean, if he went to the Vikings, he was almost. The Vikings traded up. They had a fourth-round pick, and it was more than the third-round pick that Cleveland was offering. But he could have been a Viking, and the guy he's going to make there's going to be a lot of jersey sales, and it's just the guy's just got to play. And if he wins, if he does fine, then I think not all will be forgiven, but the thing is that
all will be forgotten.
Forgotten, yeah. So it is pretty crazy. I even like, you know, want to at times like seeing what's he up to and, you know, checking out to see how he's doing.
That's your thing, dude. You're the outside the lines guy. You're the one that checks up on it. I can see why it gets your attention.
But the guy does. It's just his, I guess, personality is out there, and he's he scrambles and he makes the game more exciting. Johnny football,
yeah,
and all that. So. I mean,
he's your new Tebow, isn't he?
Whoa! Hey,
the funny thing is that Tebow's like, you know, he's he's straight like, you know, a Christian, and he is very outgoing with it, very altruistic, I guess you could say. Giving,
you can apply it. Yeah, I'll let that go.
And it's just Manziel. It's the opposite.
He's altruistic to the women at the party.
Yeah. So. It's funny, but
altruistic with his beep. Anyway, it's the best I can do it on this show. I'm sorry.
Yeah, so
we'll go around the room real quick. We got about 2 minutes left. There's one quick question I wanted to ask you guys. Quick yes or no right now. Andrew Luck, an elite quarterback in this NFL?
Yes.
I'd say yes.
Okay.
Top 10.
Okay. Fourth down.
90 seconds.
Playoff game versus the Chiefs. Alex Smith throws an excellent ball to Dwayne Bowe. Step one's in bounds. Step two out of bounds. Game's over. Suck up. Cannot try for the field goal. Should he keep his foot in? Should Andrew Luck lose that playoff game? Do you still believe him elite?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
You say that now, but I think what I'm trying to say is the public, the impression may have changed your opinion. I'm with you guys. No,
that's just one game. How many comebacks did we have
11,
for him?
I believe.
Exactly. Yeah, so,
which would only have been 10 if he didn't win that game. Right. Anyways, I am Kyle Nash, the student of the game. You can catch me on Twitter at TheSOTG. Catch Chris Rankin at Rankin, TheSOTG. And, of course, Weasel Weez.
Yeah, boy.
At Weasel, TheSOTG. All that on Twitter there. And, of course, check out the website, NGSCSports.com. Good times there. Find some articles. And I will be making my writing comeback very soon. I've been talking to our lead editor, Teron Davenport. And I need to knock the rust off a little bit. This paternity leave thing is done. It's run its course. I'm going to write a little bit. I'm just saying. So thank you, of course, to Lamont Brothers for checking in. Excellent insight on the Browns roster. But gentlemen, until next time, class dismissed.
10 seconds.